Now, time to hear from three scientists who discovered this morning they had won the Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine. As NPR's John Hamilton reports, they won for explaining a biological process that seems to play an important role in cancer and aging.
When cells divide, they lose a tiny bit of genetic information at the end of each chromosome.
The ends of chromosomes are always wearing down.
Elizabeth Blackburn from the University of California, San Francisco, is one of the scientists who became a Nobel winner today. Blackburn says the ends of chromosomes would eventually get worn away if they weren't protected by something called a telomere. She says it acts like the plastic tip on a shoelace, which prevents the lace end from fraying. But where do telomeres come from? That's what Blackburn was trying to figure out in the 1980s when she was at UC Berkeley. She figured there must be an enzyme responsible for making and maintaining these genetic shoelace tips.
There were some hints, and then I think there was a particular time when we really saw a particular piece of evidence there which said very strongly to us, this thing really does exist.
The discovery was made by Carol Greider, who was a graduate student back then. These days, Greider is a professor at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. She also will receive a share of the Nobel Prize.
We were studying these single-celled pond animals called tetrahymena that happen to have 40,000 chromosomes. And we figured if you want to understand how chromosomes are replicated and how telomeres work, go to the organism that has 40,000 of them.
What Greider found in those organisms was an enzyme that was able to keep the ends of chromosomes in good shape. She says at first they called the enzyme telomere terminal transferase.
But we realized, especially because we were working with this organism that was called Tetrahymena thermophila, that if you want to say Tetrahymena thermophila telomere terminal transferase, that gets to be a mouthful.
So Greider took a friend's suggestion and renamed the enzyme telomerase. At the time, it wasn't clear whether the system worked the same way in other species. That question was answered by Jack Szostek, a geneticist at Harvard Medical School and Massachusetts General Hospital. He's the third recipient of today's Nobel Prize. Szostek took the telomere DNA from the organism Blackburn and Greider were studying and inserted it into yeast cells. He then used X-ray images to see whether the DNA was protecting yeast chromosomes during cell division.
There was a moment when, you know, in sort of developing the X-ray film where, you know, just by looking at it, it was obvious that the experiment had worked and that therefore the telomere machinery was working in yeast.
That suggested the machinery would be present in all species, including humans. More recent research has confirmed that. Szostek says that when he and other scientists made those early discoveries, they were just trying to understand how cells work. But since then, it's become clear that the process they uncovered offers a new way to understand a wide range of diseases, including cancer. Szostek says cancer cells depend on telomerase. He says it seems to allow them to divide like crazy without dying the way normal cells would.
The hope is that by interfering with the enzyme, maybe there'll be a therapeutically useful benefit.
Elizabeth Blackburn from UC San Francisco says telomeres also seem to have a role in things like heart disease, diabetes, and perhaps even the aging process itself. Blackburn's recent work suggests that chronic psychological stress can actually damage telomeres. John Hamilton, NPR News.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Today, for our series, Are You Covered?, we're going to hear about health insurance from the perspective of a woman in Colorado. She's a business owner who buys her own health coverage. And a few years ago, she became familiar with Medicaid after her mother needed to move to a nursing home. Medicaid is the federal and state-funded program that helps provide health care for the poor and disabled. About a third of Medicaid dollars go toward long-term care in facilities such as nursing homes. NPR's Jeff Brady takes us to Flagler, Colorado.
Lila Peterson's business is called the Anything and Everything Store for good reason. The shelves are packed with a mix of new and secondhand items.
Yeah, we've been referred to as the Flagler Walmart.
In this small town of 600 people, Peterson considers her business as much community service as profit-making enterprise. Still, she has bills to pay, like the monthly premium for her and her husband's HMO.
Right now, we're paying $11.50 for just two people, and I don't have a choice. I have to pay that because no other insurance company will take us.
Peterson and her husband are in their 50s. There are some pre-existing conditions, such as her husband's diabetes. It feels to her like their health care options are limited. Politically, Peterson says she typically votes Republican, but last year she picked President Obama, and she's excited about efforts to overhaul health care in the U.S. While she's frustrated with the cost of her own coverage, she's very satisfied with the care her mother receives under Medicaid. That's the government program for the poorest and most in need.
Hello.
How are you?
Pretty good.
Several times a week, Leela makes the 30-mile drive to Hugo, Colorado, to visit her mother, 94-year-old Gracie Scarrow.
This is a double room. She has all of her stuffed animals that she wins at bingo. And then she likes her dolls and the flowers.
I like to kind of pick along on that.
Oh, so you have a keyboard here, it looks like.
Yes.
Scarrow apologizes for her shaky hand, but says playing the keyboard helps pass the time. She came here nearly 4 years ago after an incident at home.
Well, I have congestive heart failure, and I guess I did pass out one night, and I had a heart pill in my hand, but I didn't take it.
Peterson says her mom couldn't afford the nursing home on her own. She had Social Security income of $600 a month and cleared only $3,500 from the sale of her house. So a doctor suggested they apply for Medicaid.
And at that point, I would say there probably was not a choice of what you had to do.
Well, I just wasn't able to work.
Medicaid pays the $80,000 a year bill for Scarrow's care. She's left with about $50 of her Social Security check each month for spending money. Colorado has almost 500,000 people on Medicaid. That number went up more than 10% in the last year alone, thanks in large part to the poor economy. The federal government typically splits the cost of Medicaid with Colorado, though with the recent stimulus money, the federal government is picking up a larger share now. Even with that help, Colorado's governor was forced to trim payments to doctors and hospitals to help fill the state's budget gap. Peterson says at first her mom was embarrassed about accepting government help because she's always been independent and supported herself. Much of her work life was spent in facilities like this one as a nurse's assistant.
Mom worked in an era when health care was what it was called. It was called care, kindness and care. In today's world, health care is money.
Peterson believes the healthcare system in the U.S. needs fixing. She doesn't have a specific solution, but she does support things like tort reform and tighter regulation for insurance companies. In coming months, she'll watch closely to see what solutions policymakers in Washington come up with. Jeff Brady, NPR News, Denver.
Now to another victim of financial troubles. Before there was the Food Network or Julia Child or Martha Stewart, there was Gourmet Magazine. But after inspiring generations of chefs and home cooks alike, Gourmet's nearly 70-year run is coming to an end. Today, Condé Nast announced that it's shutting down Gourmet, as well as three other magazines, Modern Bride, Elegant Bride, and the parenting magazine Cookie, because of declining ad revenue. The loss of the country's oldest food magazine is a bitter thing indeed for many cooks, among them Lynn Rosetto Casper, host of the public radio program The Splendid Table. Lynn, are you brandishing a whisk in anger right now?
I'm brandishing much more than a whisk right now.
Yes. Well, this is an upsetting thing for you.
It is, because, first of all, these are my colleagues, and a lot of talented people are now out of work. Secondly, this was the mother of all American food magazines. I mean, Gourmet began back in the early 1940s by coincidence at the start of World War II. And I remember, I mean, I was a kid. I think I was reading Gourmet when I was 13.
No kidding.
Yeah, and it was hysterical because when I think about it, it was about this world that was so unobtainable, but you loved hearing about it. It was sort of the Harper's Bazaar, you know, of food. But the way that it's evolved is the thing that I find so interesting, because back in the 40s, it was talking to the people who were essentially very interested in food. Most of them had traveled. They had money. But and I should tell you, right now in front of me is the November 1944 issue of Gourmet.
Oh, you brought it in with you.
Yeah, I brought it in with me. I collect everything. And this is, yes, I know. What is this woman doing whipping this out? But the reality is that this is interesting. This is the Thanksgiving issue, right? This is during World War II. The cover is, they drew the covers then. There wasn't photography. It's a picture of maple syrup with a pile of pancakes.
Hmm.
And the only, I mean, there are Thanksgiving references, but there are stuffing recipes. That's the specific recipe at the time. And they're talking about Texas barbecue. It's so interesting. And the magazine evolved over the years. It became very much a Francophile publication with a lot of visits to the Far East, etc. And I think it went through what I think of as a dumb period, where you kept reading the same stories done by the same people. But about 10 years ago, when Ruth Reichel took over Gourmet, she took this magazine and she took an opportunity to redo a classic, and I think she did a bang-up job.
Well, it's interesting. I'm looking at a Twitter post from her. She says, I'm sorry not to be posting, she says, but I'm packing. We're all stunned, sad. Do you think, really need a printed magazine like Gourmet? Think about how people are using recipes online. You can get all of Gourmet's recipes online.
But food isn't just recipes. Mm. Food is far more than recipes. Food is stories. Food is stories about people. Food's politics. Food's history. And Gourmet was bringing that all in and embracing it. I mean, I love the fact that I could open Gourmet today or a year ago and read about beach shacks selling fried fish in Rio, or about a great place in Wisconsin where I could get smoked mutton, or about something that, you know, you're looking at spending $2 to make dinner. So I miss the magazine. Yes, I want to hold it in my hands. I want to drool over those pages.
Lynn, thanks very much for talking with us.
You're welcome.
That's Lynn Rosetta Casper, who hosts the public radio program The Splendid Table. We were talking about the end of Gourmet magazine, announced today by Condé Nast.
This is NPR, National Public Radio. From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. It's time now for All Tech Considered. We're staying in the office today to talk about change. The typewriter long ago gave way to the desktop computer. Copy machines have gotten faster and smarter, sometimes even smarter than those of us who have to use them. Technology has changed just about everything in the average office, but one, the business card. What do we do with all of those? That's the challenge we put to NPR's Joshua Brockman.
As I rummage through boxes, I realize that I've got a full house. That would be good if we were talking about playing cards, but we're not. It's business cards that are taking up an awful lot of space in my apartment. Some are in Rolodexes. Then there are others, squirreled away, in file cabinets, shoe boxes, even cigar boxes. The hand I've been dealt is to transform all this paper into a digital format. I've got my laptop and what's called a NeatDesk scanner. NeatDesk digitizes the cards, creates a searchable PDF, and even imports the information into electronic address books. But it comes at a relatively high price, more than $400. For inspiration, I've posted the last line of the manual on my refrigerator door, right next to my fortune cookie sayings. It reads, "You are now ready to say goodbye to paper clutter and hello to an organized digital life."
Take anything that you have on your desktop, scan it in, and you'll be able to find it and have it digitally available to you forever and ever.
Les Spiro is CEO of the Neat Company. He says NeatDesk can handle 15 business cards per minute. Let the game begin with just 10 minutes on the clock. I mean, on my kitchen timer. It's an intense fight. The business cards are formidable, but I'm loading 10 at a time. There is another way to manage business cards, and that's by taking digital photos with your camera or cell phone and uploading them to a free online service called Evernote. Phil Libin is CEO of the company.
I used to think business cards were totally useless. With Evernote, they've actually become much more useful because they kind of become this key to a whole set of thoughts and memories about that particular person or company.
So a search for a business card in Evernote turns up an actual image of the card and anything else you photographed related to that meeting, handwritten notes, even a whiteboard. Time's up. NeatDesk scanned about 70 cards in 10 minutes. Not all of the information was digitized correctly, but the software does allow you to make changes. These digital options look like a winning hand for dealing with my deck of business cards. Joshua Brockman, NPR News.